Hi everybody, this is Paul Douglas Boyer with the Mad Money Machine, show number 55, proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Well, I conducted an interview with Dan Solon, the author of the smartest investment book you'll ever read, this morning, and I had promised you that I was going to put that interview out on show for March 27th. Well, in the interim, I didn't realize that I was going to actually put out a show today. More about that later. But the interview with him was so good, I just want to include it in today's show. I don't want to chop it up in half. I don't want to delay it a week. I want you to hear it. It's going to make this show a lot longer than normal, but I guess that's why podcasting is so great. You can pause it and listen to it later if you've already arrived at work by the time the interview starts. So here we go with show 55. Later in the show, an interview with Dan Solon. Thanks for listening.
Are investors getting up?
Well, I would say there's some evidence in that they have come more to favor index funds over time. So they have learned that they can't try to beat the market by picking stocks themselves, and they've learned the disadvantage of having high costs. So by going with low-cost index funds, they've really probably got the best solution for themselves, and more and more have gone that direction. So I would say that at least that group has gotten smarter about it. If you take the low-cost index funds, they are getting costs down to a minimum. And in a sense, you own a cross-section of America at a very, very low cost. And you'll get a good result with that unless you panic at the wrong time or something. So if you just stick with it for decades, you'll do fine. So by going with low-cost index funds, they've really probably got the best solution for themselves. If you just stick with it for decades, you'll do fine.
Mad Money Machine, named by Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine as one of the must-read blogs.
The Mad Money Machine, nominated as Best Business Podcast at PodcastAwards.com.
Yes, indeed, that was Warren Buffett with Liz Claiborne on CNBC March 13th, saying everyone should just buy and hold index funds and avoid stock picking. Hi, everybody, this is Paul Douglas Boyer, the Mad Money Machine. Thank you so very much for downloading this show. Yes, it's been only 1 week since the last show, and if you missed the last show, definitely want to go back and download show 54, interview with Henry Blodgett, the author of the Wall Street Self-Defense Manual. Great book. Pick it up if you haven't read it. We've got a lot of stuff to lump in to this show before we get to the next show, show 56. So stay with me. Coming up on show 55, I'll look at Cramer's performance from last July. I'll tell you about the DC Diehards meeting I attended. We'll have Mark Hebner presents The Answer. And I'll talk about the total stock market funds. All of that and much, much more on the Mad Money Machine. But yes, indeed, I am pleased to announce that by popular demand, your votes, the Mad Money Machine will be going back to a weekly schedule. You can now depend on Mad Money Machine for your weekly source of intelligent investing information. So where do I begin with this show? If you're a first-time listener, you definitely go back and listen to one other show. This one's a mix of a bunch of topics, and let's start out with good old-fashioned, old-school Cramer Performance Showdown. Now, here's what I did. I said, let's pick a time where the market was down and we give Cramer a really good chance of beating the market. You know, in other words, stocks are going to go up after that. We know they went up after that. So I'm going to go back. I went back to the middle of July of last year. As you recall, from May to July of last year, stocks took a big hit and went down. So I went back into the archives and looked at some of his stock picks on about July 18th. And I picked out seven stocks that he recommended in his featured segment on the Mad Money Show. And here they are: GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, Coca-Cola, KO, the St. Jude Medical, STJ, Johnson & Johnson, J&J, PepsiCo, PEP, United Technologies, UTX, and Altria, MO. Now, you recognize what's going on there with these stocks, right? As stocks had been going down and down and down, there was a bunch of pressure on Cramer to get defensive. And these are defensive names. And so he's following the momentum there of thinking that maybe the stock market is just going to keep going down, so let's get into these defensive stocks. So what if you would have equally invested in these stocks? What would your performance have been? Since that time, Up until Monday, March 19th, the average gain of all seven of those stocks is 6.8%. You say, hey, that's not bad, 6.8% gain in less than a year. Well, compare that to the S&P 500 fund. SPY is the one I chose in this case. It is up 11.9% since that time. And compare that against the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, which just happens to beat the SPY in that time frame. It's up 13.6%. Now, if you look at a chart of those two, the SPY, the S&P 500 fund versus the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index fund, they track each other very, very closely. In fact, in the early months of that time frame, the Vanguard Total Stock Market fund was dipping slightly below the S&P 500 fund, and then as about December time frame, the Vanguard Total Stock Market overtook the S&P. Every once in a while, they keep bopping back and forth from each other about a percent or two, and currently it's about a percent and a half more than the S&P 500. But my favorite benchmark, the benchmark we use in the Portfolio Smackdown, is the Index Folio 100. How did it do? I did since August 1st through February 28th. The performance of the IFA Index 100 is up 17%, and that includes all of the fees involved in that portfolio. So I got to say, Cramer's picks did you wrong in that time frame. On the previous show, I mentioned the diehards.org forum boards, and I don't know how many of you went out to sign up for that. I noticed there's a large increase in the amount of members there. There's up to 1,200 members of that and growing rapidly. It's only a couple of months in existence. Well, as I was hunting around those boards, I saw that there is a DC area diehards meeting, and I looked and clicked on when the date was, and it was only a few days away. So I said, well, I think I'll attend that. And I did that last Sunday. I went down into Washington, DC. There were 14 of us that met at a hotel restaurant there around a table. Ages ranged from 30s through 70s at this discussion. It was a wide-ranging discussion of all kinds of topics. The main topic was portfolio checkups. But we talked about rebalancing. We talked about asset allocation. We talked about details of specific funds and ETFs. Bottom line was that it was a very interesting meeting for the investment geek, like most of us are. So if you have a local diehards meeting near you, I recommend attending. Of course, there's no cost other than just getting there, maybe buying a cup of coffee. The question this time is it better to slice and dice or just buy the whole market? To find out, I turn to Mark Hebner presents The Answer.
Staring you right in the face is the answer.
The question this time is there extra or excess return that one could expect by emphasizing either small cap stocks or value stocks in your portfolio? And the reason I come to this question is that in John Bogle's new book, The Little Book of Common Sense Investing, and his focus is really just investing in the total stock market fund, and forget it. There's a chapter in the back there, chapter 14, called Index Funds That Promise to Beat the Market. And in particular, on page 160, he says that there's really no difference between investing in value versus growth. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, first, let me say that there is no better friend to the investors of the world than John Bogle. With the first creation of an index mutual fund back in 1975, the end of 1975, the further creation of many different indexing products, he has done more to help investors than anybody else literally on the planet. Also, he's a very wonderful man and just does a lot of good for investors.
Excellent.
But in regards to this particular area, for some reason, we have a different set of data, looks like, and I just wanted to explain to investors that there is a difference between these different indexes in these periods. Now, he's actually stated in his paragraph here that he's talking about growth mutual funds and value funds. But since we're really talking about how we would design a portfolio of index funds in this chapter, I went and looked up the FAMA French indexes over this period,
He mentioned actually three different periods, but the period he emphasized the most was 1937 to 1967, where he indicated in here that the growth funds did better. Well, I looked at both large value, small value, and then I compared large growth and small growth. The large value index did 13.19 and small value 15.45. That's an annualized return over those 31 years. And large growth only did 10.26 and small growth 11.45. So there's almost a 3% gap in the large side and a, what do we got, about a 4% gap in the small value versus small growth. So that's a very substantial difference, especially when you compound a dollar over that period of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He also mentioned the 70-year period from 1937 to 2006, and there we see similar data. So you see almost the same spread in a 70-year period that you did in the 31-year period. But this book is really designed for the beginning investor and not so much for the sophisticated statistician or mathematician investor who wants to see all these details that
good
I'm showing
point,
here.
Because in fact, later in the book on page 206, John Bogle does have a section in there. He says, while I favor the pristine and classic all U.S. stock market and all bond market approach, there are perfectly reasonable alternative strategies for supplementing the index funds in your serious money portfolio. And then he talks about perhaps adding some international funds, and then on page 206, he's got a section, slice and dice. Can you explain what slice and dice is?
Well, slice and dice means you're taking the market and cutting it up into pieces, basically. And generally, the slice and dice applies to the four asset classes that I'm actually showing here in the tables, large value, small value, large growth, and small growth. Certain investors like to sort of pick and choose among those and how much they would overweight different segments of the market, or sometimes what are called dimensions of the market. That's what he's referring to there, and he does still give you strong caution that if you do this, you still may not do better than the market return, but if you are going to do it, you should limit it to about 15% of your portfolio and still leave about 85% in your core or broad market index.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mark, and I encourage all the listeners to go and take a look at the chart you've presented.
You're welcome, Paul. Thanks.
And now you have the answer.
Staring you right in the face is the answer.
Let's go to the phones, Madman Machine Line 206-734-4763, and I believe this call is from Board of Directors member Rav Jim.
So this is Jim calling, and I have a question. It seems that you were very VTI-centered during your last show, and I'm just kind of curious. Beyond VTI, you also talked about CWI and TMW. Would you have answered any of those other people, CWI or TMW? Or do you think the VTI really is the total market index? Thank you so much. Love the shows. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jeff, for calling in and being a good active board of directors member. Yeah, the VTI, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, and TMW is the Dow Jones Wilshire Total Stock Market Index. And they, if you look at a chart of them, they overlay on each other pretty precisely and exactly. But I still like the VTI better, because it owns about 3 to 4 times as many different stocks, 3,725 to be exact, versus 968, according to Morningstar, for the TMW. And also the expense ratio of VTI is 0.07 versus TMW is 0.21. So if you look at that, you'd say, well, the expenses are 3 times as more for the TMW. So that settles it for me on the question of VTI versus TMW. Now, the other one you mentioned, CWI, is the All Country World Index, an exchange-traded fund, for international stocks, not including United States stocks. Now, in this one, it owns 637 stocks, and it has an expense ratio of 0.34%. Ah, but new on the market now is the Vanguard All-Country World Index International Exchange-Traded Fund, and it owns 2,200 stocks from 47 countries and has a slightly less expense ratio of 0.25%. So for my money, I'd look at the VTI and the VEU, combining those, getting you total exposure to the world. Now, mixing U.S. and international in that way is a portfolio that John Bogle recommends and our upcoming guest Dan Solden recommends, just buying the entire markets of U.S. and some international, throwing in some bonds. But what about the slice and dicers? Slice and dice, in the words of John Bogle, says some investors hold the all market or S&P 500 index fund as the core and add a value index fund and a small cap index fund as satellites. He says he's skeptical that any kind of superior in performance like that will endure forever, but it might not be unreasonable to hold, say, 85% in the core, another 10 in value, and 5 in small cap stocks. So let's talk about this slice and dice in terms of pizzas. First of all, you've got two pizzas coming to you. Domino's is going to deliver you two pizzas. By the way, the Domino's Brooklyn-style pizza with pepperoni, man, that is a great pizza. It's one of my favorite pizzas. But anyway, let's say that you've got a stock pizza and a bond pizza. For me, the stock pizza is huge in comparison to the size of the bond pizza. My bond pizza looks like one of those little tiny bagel pizzas, and the stock pizza is just gigantic. So let's throw away the bond pizza for now and talk about the stock pizza. Divide that right in half, just for sake of argument. Some people like to think that the world is made up of half U.S. stocks and half international stocks. Throw the international half of the pizza away. Now you're left with this big U.S. half of the pizza. How are you going to slice that up? According to index funds advisors, they're going to slice it in four slices. Large cap growth, large cap value, small cap value, and micro cap. And so if you took that U.S. half of the pizza and divided it right in half again, you'd have one of those pieces is a large cap value piece, a big, big piece of pizza. Now take the other half of that half a pizza and divide it into three pieces, basically 1/6 of that half of the pizza. You'd have one piece in large cap growth, one piece in small cap value, and one piece is micro cap stocks. Now how would you slice that half of the pizza up if it was a Vanguard Total Stock Market Index pizza? Well, you'd take almost half of it, 40% of it, and make a pretty big piece that is the large cap growth. And then you take another equal sized piece, 40%, that is the large cap value. Now you've got another slice of it, about a sixth of the pizza, that is the small cap piece. And then you've got, if you chop off like the little corner on the very edge of it, 2% is for the micro cap piece. So you can see the difference in the way the pizza is sliced up for those that invest slice and dice and those that invest in total market cap weighted. And I don't know about you, but I'm getting awfully hungry. Let's take a quick look at the results of the Portfolio Smackdown. If you go to madmoneymachine.com and click on the Portfolios tab, you will see down in there the results of the IFA Index Folio 100 versus the average of the 25 other people trying to pick stocks according to Cramer's recommendations and suggestions. And as of Monday, March 19th, the IFA Index Folio 100 is got a gain year to date of 1.31%, and the average of all the portfolios is down negative 1.42%. Now I do have to give props to Alan Pendleton. Hey, you're doing some good trades out there, Alan. Up 7.27%. And Doug Roseville is just barely beating the index folio. He's up 1.62%. Otherwise, index folio 100 is beating everybody else just straight up. And I think for the first time this year, let's look at the public portfolio SmackDown game. There are 311 players. And who's in number one but Nevada, which I believe is the same as Nevsta, right? Our Bonza mate from Australia. And as of Monday, his return is up 49.22%. He's playing a lot of short plays in the market. I can't remember if I intended to leave shorting in there. I thought that I didn't have that turned on because I know on Mad Money, Jim Cramer never really encourages shorting. But anyway, it's in there, and Nevada has been taking advantage of shorting. We have 16 players that are over 10% out of the 311 that are playing. Time now for some sage advice from CNBC.
Important thing to keep in mind is once we get through this corrective phase, it's not like we're going to go back into another major bull market. We'll have put our intermediate term top in and intermediate term bottom in. And then what I think you're going to see for the spring and summer is really a consolidation phase where the market spends most of its time between 1350 and 1425 in the S&P, maybe 1350 to 1450 on the wide. And then I think the next major break in the market is going to be later in the year towards the end of 07. Okay.
Now, in nonsense like that, just absolutely absurd. Let's say I bought a stock in the Age of Aquarius. Let's go look at the horoscope for that stock. It says it's more than possible that it'll feel a little pressured today. If it finds a family member, perhaps a stock in the same family or same sector, that's experiencing a surge of ambition on its behalf and pushing it to do better, just think twice before committing yourself to anything. Because when the unhelpful aspect from Venus fades, you'll feel differently. Here now is the interview with Dan Solon that I promised, and I just couldn't wait to get it into the show. Hope you stay with it till the end, and then I've got some announcement at the end. Daniel R. Solon is the author of The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read, which the subtitle is The Simple, Stress-Free Way to Reach Your Investment Goals. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine, Dan.
Thank you, Paul. Very nice to be with you.
Also on the line with me is Mark Hebner of Index Funds Advisors. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Glad to be here with my buddy Dan Solon.
All right. Dan, the first question about this book is, why is this the smartest investment book I'll ever read?
I think the emphasis is more on you'll ever read than the smartest investment book, although I hope it has a component of both. When I wrote this book, I was well aware that there are many excellent investment books out there, but the problem with most of them is that they're so dense and complicated, they make investing so difficult for people to understand that it was very hard for people to get through them and to get to the bottom line, which is, what am I supposed to do with my money? So I wanted to write a book that everybody could understand that would lay out exactly what it is that people should do in a way that was easily understandable, but academically valid.
Well, I appreciate that because, in fact, I agree with that. I know that William Bernstein's books are pretty thick and complicated, and you're right. Not a lot of folks are going to read that. And your book, now, would you be offended if I say that your book is a great book for the bathroom?
No, I wouldn't be offended. And if you said that Bill Bernstein's books were the smartest investment books ever written, I wouldn't be offended by that either.
Okay. I saw your interview on the CBS Early Show, and I've got a link to that on my website. And on that show, you explained the four steps, and you also had a statement on there that I just love. You said market returns are superior returns. And I think that should be made into bumper stickers, T-shirts, hats, mouse pads, whatever. Market returns are superior returns. Would you elaborate on that?
I think that the securities industry has done a great job of selling a bill of goods to investors, which is that they can provide superior returns, and they denigrate market returns, which are simply the returns that investors, all investors, can easily achieve by following the plan in my book. And they make it appear that they can somehow add value to those returns. But the point, if you look at the data indicates that the vast majority of investors significantly underperform market returns. In fact, they get about half of market returns. And if you look at the performance of all of the actively managed funds out there, you find that less than 5% of them meet or exceed market returns over the long term. So all investors should be thrilled to get market returns and should understand that getting market returns is something they can very easily do by following the simple four-step plan in my book.
Let me just add, Dan, that in addition, they do even worse than that. They call them average returns. And why would you settle for average?
Well, you're right. What they do is kind of trivialize and marginalize market returns by saying, well, that's for people who really can't do any better, but that's why we're here. We right. charge you higher fees and costs, and in exchange, we can give you returns that really add value. And by adding value, that has to mean we can give you returns that are better than market returns. But there is no data that indicates that they can do so consistently over the long term. So, frankly, the process makes absolutely no sense to me, and I don't understand why people continue to use brokers or advisors who are telling them they can do something and that they have an expertise that they can't do and that they don't have.
Dan, are you coming at this from personal experience? Do you have you been bitten by these excessive fees in your past? Were you an active investor at one time, now changed to passive, or did you figure this out from the very beginning?
Well, I didn't figure it out from the very beginning, for sure, because most people don't. We're bombarded with so much advertising to the contrary. But the way I came to all of this was that I'm a securities arbitration lawyer who had represented many people who were victims of broker misconduct. And when I got into these cases and looked at the devastation caused by brokers who are pitching their ability to beat market returns, it became very clear to me that they don't focus at all on risk. So you have people taking enormous risks, generally significantly underperforming the market, and often losing a devastating amount of money. So I would go through the process of trying to get their money back, but I would see the emotional and, in many cases, the physical toll that this took on them. So those clients would come to me and would say, okay, I certainly understand that this isn't the way to invest. What is the way to invest? And that is kind of the background and the reason for why I wrote The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read. It was really intended to be a handout to my former clients, giving them an alternative to this system, which clearly is not working.
Hey, Dan, have you ever had a stockbroker in any of your arbitration hearings be able to define standard deviation or give you the standard deviation of their client's portfolio?
You know, that's such an interesting question, Mark. I can tell you that at every hearing, I always go through the following questions. I say to the brokers I'm cross-examining, do you believe that risk is important? And every broker says, yes, we think risk is terribly important because clients have to understand risk. So then I say, so how did you measure the risk of this portfolio? And in 40 years of being a trial lawyer, this is the only question that is reacted to uniformly with stunned silence. Nobody can answer that question. I have never gotten the answer, well, we measure risk using standard deviation, and here's the standard deviation of this portfolio. I have
Amazing.
Never had, in all the cases I've had, no broker has ever calculated the standard deviation of a portfolio, which is really shocking to me.
Absolutely amazing. I like to now say that, you know, it's like the cart and the horse here. The horse is risk and the cart is the return, but most people have the cart before the horse.
Exactly right. Most people are focused because their brokers are always focused on the upside, and they don't understand not only how much risk they're taking, but how much uncompensated risk they're taking. They're taking risk for which there is no comparable reward, and neither they nor their broker have any understanding of what that is.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned the four steps, and I direct listeners to this show to go out to my website and watch your interview on CBS to give it a breakdown of what the four steps are. And what I'd like to do, though, is if I may play devil's advocate for a moment.
Sure.
Your recommended portfolios in the book, they invest in total market funds that are large cap weighted. Some studies have shown that small cap and value stocks have performed better in the long term history. Are you favoring simplicity over maximizing results?
No, and my recommended portfolios don't favor large cap stocks. My recommended portfolios give a globally diversified portfolio that tracks the entire domestic stock market, including small caps and small value, and the entire international stock market. So you really have every sub-asset class in my recommended portfolios for stocks, and then the index fund for bonds is a broad-based domestic index fund. So it would be different if I was recommending an S&P 500 index fund, but I'm not. The Total Markets Fund tracks the Wilshire 5000. So people who invest in my recommended portfolios are really getting a globally diversified portfolio of stocks and a broadly diversified domestic portfolio of bonds.
Okay, well, the alternative that a lot of people sometimes talk about is I guess there's two camps. One is the total market camp, and the other one is sort of a slice and dice camp where they try to pick a little bit extra small cap or a little bit extra value stocks. What do you think about that approach?
Well, there is a lot of data that Mark is very familiar with that I am persuaded by. There is a lot of data that indicates that small value, emerging markets, the riskier sub-asset classes over the long term will yield more positive results for actually lower risk. For clients who need to nuance their portfolios in that way, which I think I wish was every client, those clients really should be using a financial advisor who recommends funds managed by Dimensional Fund Advisors, because Dimensional Fund Advisors is the only fund family I'm aware of, there may be others, is the only fund family I'm aware of that has mutual funds that dice and slice that way. Vanguard and Fidelity and T. Rowe Price currently don't. Now, in terms of full disclosure, our financial advisory firm, Academic Wealth Management, is one of those. Mark's wonderful website and his company, Index Fund Advisors, is another. And listeners can go to Dimensional Fund Advisors website at DFA US and get a better understanding of what DFA does. But there really is no doubt that that adds value, and I certainly recommend it.
Paul, let me just throw in for a second here that what I perceive Dan is doing is really laying out something for the great majority of investors who just really don't understand this. And what he's laid out, I think, are perfect portfolios to get investors started in this passive approach. And if they want to continue to read on and continue their study, they can get some small value at Vanguard, they can get some through ETFs, and they can, you know, over time start to tweak those portfolios, even if they're an investor who wouldn't normally qualify for the minimums of certain investment advisors who specialize in passive portfolios. I think he's done an excellent job in laying out what I would call a beginner asset allocation. Then if investors wanted to go a step further and continue their study, they could tweak them and further tilt them towards small and value stocks.
Well, I absolutely agree. I mean, I know some folks who think that because a stock's price is lower, they think the stock is cheap. And this is the kind of book that I think would be a great gift to them to help them down the road of getting smarter on investing. You know, I just want to point out to listeners, if anyone ever gives this book a negative review, keep in mind that that person is most likely a mutual fund salesman or broker. Dan, do you ever get angry emails from financial planners that sell mutual funds on commission?
I have to tell you that I do get some really could be called hate email. And there was an interesting article in an editorial newspaper in Maine that mentioned what happens to advisors like Mark and me who are out there And journalists like Jonathan Clements of the Wall Street Journal, we all, I think, have the same experiences. We're taking on an industry, we're exposing that industry, and we're basically saying that they are engaged in an enterprise that really subtracts value rather than adds value, and that investors would be far better off not using them. Now, when you take that kind of a public position against a huge entrenched industry, you should expect to get a lot of very angry emails. What I'm surprised about is that I get relatively few compared to the number of emails I get from readers of my book who say, thank you so much for giving me this information. It really has changed my life. And those are really gratifying. I know that Mark gets a lot of those as well from people who go to his website and just see this information. It's like this great epiphany, and suddenly there's enlightenment from investors who are like buffered every week with conflicting information. They have no way. If they turn to the left, they get clobbered on the right. So there's no plan, and all they know is that everybody seems to have different opinions about what's happening, and suddenly you give them a system that just makes perfect logical sense. And I think most people are really very grateful. Do you find that as well, Mark?
Oh, yeah. We hear over and over from people just say, oh, thank you. I don't have to worry about my portfolio anymore.
Exactly.
I turn off the TV and I don't have to read the Wall Street Journal every day. And people tell me over and over, it's such a relief for them.
I mean, let's put it in perspective. When we talk about like nuancing asset allocations and, you know, squeezing out, you know, extra points, the Dalbar study and another recent excellent academic study showed that over the last 20 years, the returns of the average investor were 2.57% when the S&P 500 was returning 12.2%. So while I think investors should, of course, be interested in getting the most they can out of their portfolio, let's look at how the present system is working to the disservice of the average investor. When you add taxes and inflation, people have lost money over the last 20 years when the markets have been going up. So that's the overall context, and that's why my book was really written for the mass market to say, look, it may not be the perfect portfolio for everyone. You probably can do better if you really understand how the markets work. But for the vast majority of hardworking Americans, at least do this and capture market returns. It's going to be twice as good, and in some cases three times as good as what the average investor has historically been achieving relying on their broker or advisor.
It wouldn't be the Mad Money Machine show unless I asked you your opinion of Jim Cramer. Now, it's almost obvious what your opinion is going to be. Can you tell me something I might not know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to take shots at Jim Cramer because a lot of what he does, there really is no evidence supporting. I mean, he engages in stock picking. His record, as far as I can determine, is really not much better than you would get by flipping a coin. So the essential premise of what Jim Cramer does, I must say I disagree with. On the other hand, where I am surprisingly a fan of Jim Cramer is that he's got a lot of people interested in investing and has stimulated a lot of discussion about investing by people who might ordinarily simply leave this to so-called experts to advise them. So to the extent that he's got kind of the ball rolling, got people interested in doing research and in engaging in some productive activity, I think that's a good thing. I really think that the unfortunate part of the show is it conveys the impression that only someone with that kind of frenetic, manic personality who, you know, runs around engaging in all kinds of antics, that it takes that kind of a person to really figure out the markets. And that's a message that's just fundamentally wrong, and therefore I'm opposed to that message, but not really to the messenger, because I think the messenger is stimulating some good conversation.
He does fit the hyperactive label quite well, though.
Yes, he fits the manic label quite well. And he's obviously an extraordinary person. I mean, he's able to keep a lot of data in his head. But see, it's exactly that message that I think is harmful to investors, because good investing really is like watching paint dry. It is the opposite of running around frenetically blowing whistles and coining clever phrases. It's really capturing market returns in the most efficient way you can. This is neither difficult, nor an exercise that requires a lot of study, time, effort, or expertise. And I think those are very important messages. We really need to empower people to understand that they are capable of doing this in a very simple, relaxed, fairly easy way, and that you don't have to have some special insight or pretend that you do in order to achieve market returns.
Dan, on your book blog over at Amazon.com, I noticed that you put a little challenge out.
Yeah.
And requested investors to ask their brokers to write them a letter suggesting that if they invest with that broker, that their portfolio will equal or exceed market returns of your asset allocation net of fees and costs. Can
right.
you explain what that's all about?
Yeah, I mean, it occurred to me, and it came up on the early show when I was doing my interview with Hannah Storm, but it occurred to me that we all know that no advisors, whether they be passive advisors or active advisors, can guarantee profits, because that's not permitted, and it shouldn't be permitted, because nobody can obviously do that. But passive advisors certainly can say to their clients, absent some truly extraordinary circumstance like a mutual, like one of the index funds goes bankrupt and somehow that money is lost, which is really difficult to imagine. But absent that kind of event, if you invest the way we say you should invest, you will achieve market returns. I think we can say that with great confidence, net of fees and costs.
Yes.
Well, if we know you can do that, and if brokers are saying, we charge more but we add value, why wouldn't they be willing to say, as their value proposition, look, if you invest with us, you will at least do as well as achieve market returns and probably better, or even and maybe better. And so what I suggested in a blog is that people say to their broker who's trivializing market returns and saying, oh, you can do better, that's for average people. We here at our big brokerage firm with our analysts, we can do much better. Fine, put it in a letter and send it. And I entitled that blog, The One Letter You Will Never Receive from Your Broker. Now, keep in mind, what I'm not saying is that that passive investing or index investing guarantees profits. If the markets go down, if the stock markets, international and domestic, and the bond markets go down, you will still achieve market returns, but you will lose money. So I'm not saying, all I'm saying is whatever those market returns are, that's what my plan will permit you to achieve. So if somebody's going to tell you they'll do better, then let them say that in writing.
That's great. Dan, I just like a little plug here. The Library Journal just rated Dan's book one of the best business books of 2006. So congratulations on that. And I see you're like number 844 today out of 4.5 million books on Amazon. So you're doing a great job with this book.
Congratulations. Well, thanks so much, Mark. And I was thrilled and honored to get the Library Journal Award. And I'm really pleased that the book is definitely penetrating the mass market, and I think I think a lot of brokers are getting calls based on the volume of emails I get saying, we're going to go with this plan. And so I'm happy for that, because everybody, what can make people like Mark and I feel really good about what we do is we know that what we're saying is the right thing for investors to do. And we both have a tremendous conviction and a passion about that, supported by a lot of data. So everybody who does it, at least we know they will not be a victim of any broker, that they will understand the risks that they're taking, and that over time their returns will in fact be superior returns. And that has a very major positive effect on those people, on their families, on their children, on their ability to educate their children, on their ability to achieve their financial goals so that they can retire in a comfortable way. And that's really a wonderful feeling, to be getting that message out and making that kind of an impact.
Yeah, I agree. It really is a wonderful feeling, and I share that in a small, tiny way compared to you. What's next for you, Dan?
I'm looking at another book now that I've been asked to do on investing for retirement, and I'm particularly looking at what I think is a really major national scandal, which is the 401k plans and how they are run and why they are not in the best interest of employees. I just think this is a terrible, really a terrible situation. And I know that the SEC is also looking into this, but again, the same essential premise that they're filled with actively managed funds and all kinds of fees, undisclosed fees. And so I really want to focus on that area because I think I can probably do the most good by educating people on how to deal with that current system and hopefully play a very small role in reforming that system.
I think that won't be as hard as you think, Dan, because the U.S. government in their own retirement plan now has limited their choices down to 5 different index funds.
So, I didn't know that, but that's such encouraging news, Mark, really.
Yeah.
The book is the smartest investment book that you'll ever read. Emphasis on the book that you'll ever read. The author, Dan Solon. Thank you so much, Dan, for being on the Mad Money Machine.
Well, thank you, Paul and Mark. I really enjoyed being with both of you.
Thank you, Dan.
Wow, what a great guest Dan was. And I encourage you to go out to the Amazon and pick up a copy of that book. You can find a link to it from my website. Now, here's something I'd like for you to do now. Take out your cell phone. Get out your cell phone. Start dialing this phone number, 206-734-4763. You got it out yet? 206-734-4763. Just go ahead and dial it right now. And leave me a message on my Skype line. And then save that number in your contacts list on your cell phone. Just call it Paul Douglas Boyer or Mad Money Machine, whatever you like. That way you can call me anytime you've got some feedback on the show. Constructive criticism of the show is welcome. Yes, believe it or not, it really is welcome. Hey, don't forget to get your Index Funds Day emails ready. Go out to indexfundsday.com. That's coming up on April 1st. I've got a lot of stuff backed up, and I could make this show go on and on and on, but I'm going to have to cut it off. Just tune in next Tuesday, March 27th, for show 56. Thank you so much for listening to the Mad Money Machine. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes slice and dice to make a Mad Money Machine. And don't forget to visit our sponsors, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios.
So by going with low-cost index funds, they've really probably got the best solution for themselves. You just stick with it for decades, you'll do fine, you'll do fine, you'll do fine, you'll do fine, you'll do fine.